early.
What do you mean he's early?
In my history, Cicada's first victim was a metahuman named Floyd Belkin. And he never killed Gridlock or Block. They're completely different victims.
Because the timeline changed.
Yeah, and now they're both dead. Because of me.
Okay, there's no telling the ripple effect of this change or what kind of future Nora's gonna return to. We gotta catch this guy fast.
Welcome to Central City Underground, episode 117, where we discuss The Flash. This week, season 5, episode 3, The Death of Vibe. Now, we want to go ahead and extend a happy birthday to one of our undergrounders, Bianca, who celebrated her birthday with us while watching episode 3 in the live chat in the Facebook group, which is awesome. And if you haven't seen it yet, or been there and hung out with us, you should do yourself a favor. Come on over. Everybody there is great. A bunch of good people. We have a good time discussing The Flash and watching it live.
Yes, it is I, Sherlock Wells. Happy birthday, Bianca. I knew it was your birthday because your hair was just cut. Your shirt was just worn so in the right way. It must be your birthday.
Sherlock Wells. Wow. Well, yeah, he was something. He was something, wasn't he?
He was something else. So it's good to be back here on another Central City Underground. What is going on? Story's voice, Mr. Jada, how you doing?
Good, good, good. How are you tonight, Professor?
I am doing quite well. everything is good here. The professor is ready to profess his love for The Flash.
Oh, really?
This is a fun episode.
It was.
They hit us right from the beginning. They did not wait. It's like they listened to us for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it when they do that.
So I think we need to start with something that made us go, ooh, and I know we all went, ooh, so that's you, that's me, and you know, you who's listening. So the episode kicks off in the year 2032. At the Flash Museum.
Ooh. Yes, it did. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe we got it.
All right. Jada, how much did you squeal like a young school child?
A lot. Probably more than was necessary. But it was great. It was great. It was the Flash. It was a version of the Flash Museum, and I'll accept it. Now, you know, it was different from the Flash Museum we saw.
I do remember it looked much different. I believe the building they showed us that you're referring to was some building that's in Central City. Might be the courthouse or something to that nature.
Governmental.
but here in this iteration. Maybe through all the time travel, now the Flash Museum appears to be at Star Labs.
Which is quite appropriate.
Which it's good to know that by the year 2032, they fix the roof.
That sounds about right.
Let's get right into this. I mean, I was also super excited and really like almost jaw hit the floor because I was like, my immediate thought, and we've only been doing this together a couple of weeks now, I was like, Jada must be so happy right now because we're both very excited. So we are introduced to the Flash Museum. We see a young Nora talking and doing the voiceover, and we are in the Hall of Villains, and it is littered with Easter eggs.
Oh, yes.
So Jada, what are some things that you saw? And let's see if we can collect all the eggs.
No, you know, when I was watching, it was so hard to really see everything. I was just watching it and I didn't have it. I wasn't watching it in any kind of medium that I could rewind or anything. I was watching it live. I saw a couple of things. I mean, I saw the obvious Flash baddie costumes. I think I saw Reverse Flash in there. And I saw the black costume in it, which I'm assuming was Zoom. But there was a fair amount of things in there. How much did you catch?
I did have the ability to rewind and read a few things when I was not quite sure. So you are right. You hit on, we see the Reverse Flash costume front and center That's like the first thing you see when you walk in, you know, with the tachyon device on it. We see a display dedicated to the Thinker. We get the Thinker's chair. Mm-hmm. We see Weather Wizard's wand.
Ooh, yeah.
There were a number of masks or helmet-like things shown, and the only one that I was able to discern was the mask worn by Jay Garrick when he was locked up in the cage on Earth 2.
Ooh.
That was on display, which was also next to the Trickster's gun.
Wow, so much stuff.
We do see the Zoom costume. We see Dr. Light's costume, who nobody has seen since she went invisible.
She's and presumably still naked running around somewhere.
If she makes it to 2032, she can go get an outfit. We see the Savitar costume.
Ooh.
And we get what Nora winds up looking at is a paper, a newspaper hologram image of a headline referencing Cicada. And I think, I'm pretty sure, it referenced that Cicada has never been caught.
Yes, yes.
Which leads to some references from Cisco before he dies, and hopefully you heard the air quotes on that. referencing him being like the Jack the Ripper figure of somebody who's done all this killing and has never been caught. There were other things there that I don't know, and I tried to look up and find anybody who may have referenced other Easter eggs in that scene. But again, the room we were in for this particular episode, and hopefully it's, and I firmly believe it's not going to be the last thing we see in the Flash Museum, but here we were exposed to an area dedicated to the villains and the rogues that have come up in the Flash's time as the Flash. And obviously we know that at this point, at the age that Nora is, being a youngster, that this is happening post 2024. So 2032. So Barry has been gone and disappeared for 8 years at this point that we see her remembering this time in the Flash Museum.
Yeah, so that's a lot to process.
and again, it's in the opening. I mean, what that scene take? Maybe 45, 55 seconds? Just real quick, her doing the voiceover, and she's having a flashback there in the cortex as she's recalling and describing what she knows about Cicada, or what she remembers about him from, you know, her timeline and her, I guess, her history lessons. So some really interesting things. And then coming right out of that, we get some major drops and some things that a lot of us fans didn't agree with. But I think the biggest Easter egg there was she uses the term referring to groups that have tried to stop him and have failed. The League?
You know, the League.
You know, and I don't think it's the assassin kind.
No, no, no. Is this the first time that we actually get a name drop for the League?
So, this is, it's kind of bookended. If you remember back to season one, there was a point where, or maybe not season one, probably season one, the first time Barry meets and speaks with Gideon in the time vault, he is having, she starts talking where she recognizes him as, you know, Mr. Allen and, you know, founder of the Just, and like she gets cut off because like the scene cuts. I just remember she started to identify him by certain characteristics.
Yes.
As a founding member of the Just, and then that scene ended.
Wow. So this is the other end of
this.
That
is the other end where we hear the word League. So hopefully there's another room dedicated to all of those adventures.
Yeah. I wanted to see the Hall of Heroes.
The Hall of Heroes, I'm sure. one thing I didn't like about that, and I'm sure you picked up on it too, was and this is the writers making an error. They make it sound like, you know, Supergirl is a metahuman.
It seems like they often forget what constitutes a metahuman.
But I also think, based on who's saying it, I mean, Caitlin was questioning her at that point, and I don't really quite know if the rest of Team Flash knows that Supergirl is an alien.
Yeah, you know, I guess that's possible. She could just simply be misinformed. She could just simply not have all of her facts right.
But that's okay, because Caitlin does pick up other facts later in the episode. But as far as just finishing up things that made us go, ooh, and this is us jumping around the Flash timeline, I really enjoyed and thought that, obviously, I'm big on the visual effects, but I really liked how Nora employed flash time later in the episode, coming up with a plan based on what Barry said.
I thought that was great. And, you know, actually, at first I thought she was about to enter into what I believe is her special ability to go back and fix things really quick. You know how she likes to do that? She likes to rewind time for a short period and fix things. It's something that she's good at or something like that. I thought she was going to do that. And I was thinking, oh, okay, I see. So that's how they get out of this. But it wasn't. She had an inspired moment. She had a plan and she really knew what to do because she's pretty cool. She's pretty shway.
She is still shway. Absolutely. And the plan was pretty cool.
She's proving that she is quite a speedster in her own right.
Yes. But by the time we're done here in this episode, between the show and what we're going to talk about, I think there's some things we need to think about and consider.
Oh, yeah.
So let's do our own bit of a rewind here. And we've got a list and some plot points that we want to go over. And let us say that while there are things that we felt were important and really stood out to both Jada and myself, again, always be ready to contribute feedback. And if there's something you thought was super important about the episode that, you know, we don't hit on as much, please, you know, send that feedback in. And we're obviously going to get that onto a future episode and get your thoughts and make you a part of the conversation. So obviously the first thing here, big plot point, the arrival of Harrison Sherlock O-Q-U-E Wells.
Sherlock.
And obviously, you know, before we get him, we get a very funny exchange between, and I don't know this other Wells's name, the
Air Wells.
Very, very funny. Very well done. I would like to see maybe that Wells hang around for a little bit if he wasn't busy doing other projects.
Yeah, he's always fun. He's always funny. And I do enjoy him, but I'm not so sure that I would like him to stick around. I'm kind of iffy on these, what I like to call extraneous Wellses. They're great character pieces, and I think Tom Cavanaugh is a master of his craft, and I love all of them. But I'm more of a fan of the more straightforward Wellses. I kind of miss Harry. I think that's what I'm saying. I miss Harry.
I got to say, I agree. Like, I mean, we're going to get Sherlock Wells for a while because he has to pay back his debt. And we don't know how much he got paid and how much money he blew in the few hours he had the money. But, you know, Harry's not dead. I find it weird that they would not reach out to him to at least have him appear, at least give a reason why I'm not going to help you guys, or here's what I'm doing or working on Earth 2, because just to say, you know, he misses Jesse. I mean, they don't have the greatest relationship.
But I could see that. Okay, no, really, I can't, but I can understand that they didn't include him. And, you know, Jesse has a team now, so maybe he did do some serious reconciliation with his daughter, and he's helping out on that team, and he's busy. She's got her own little justice whatever over there.
You know, that would actually be something, too, that hopefully, as long as you and I get to talk about it, I'd like to see what's going on Earth, too, and what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. We're due for a visit that is more exploratory, I think. That would be nice. We are so caught up in the storyline once we get to Earth 2 each time, because there's always such dire circumstances that we don't get to look around and play. And I think a good, maybe a filler episode would be great if it was based in Earth 2.
I can't argue with you. So what do you gather and what's your first impression of Sherlock?
I don't like him much. But I understand him a lot. he's a rascal. And it seems like he's got some traits that the original Sherlock was supposed to have. Kind of a scoundrelly.
I believe Sisko described him as a weasel about yay high with a hat smelling a little bit of poutine.
Yeah. Cisco. Cisco was on point this week. Still a little sad. And, well, we'll get to Cisco. But I do like him. I don't like him. But I have a feeling I'm going to end up liking him because Kavanaugh does that with all of the Wellses. You start off iffy. I mean, well, for some of us, you start off iffy on that character. And I'm not sure if it's he inhabits the character more and more as he goes on, or if he already has the character fully fleshed out in his mind when he begins and we just get used to it. But something he does is magical. And each time I find myself, okay, I like this Wells now. The idea that he would take the money though from the team at first really had me like, oh my goodness, this guy's a jerk. But later when I realized he'd been doing this on multiple Earths to multiple people and he had seven wives, I was like, okay, this guy is just a classic jerk. He's not choosing this one moment to be a jerk. It's just in his DNA. He can't help it.
Yeah, I agree. The money thing kind of threw me off. I was like, wait, he's going to charge them money? So yeah. I didn't quite get it. But then, yeah, you know, multiple wives. Obviously, we don't know a lot about his life. So obviously, he's going to be around for a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure more of his story will be developed. And like you said, Tom Cavanaugh might be the best supporting actor. I mean, I don't even know if he's a supporting actor at this point, but certainly stretching himself and his talents and abilities to bring, you know, the name stays the same, but the everything changes.
Yeah, every character is just a different being, and I love him for it.
and credit the writers. I mean, it's not like they're saying here's some lines, create a character. So I'm sure, I'm sure it's team effort, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah, there's a synergy there that I enjoy greatly.
But he's here, and he offered some interesting insight throughout the episode. He's definitely got a high level of deductive reasoning and the ability to, from what seems like nothing to you and me, come to conclusions and make predictions.
And I was very weary of that at first. Until we get to the end. And he's pretty on point, and it's like, oh, okay, so you have certain deductive skills, and they're superior. I get it. So you're going to put those to use. Now, I wonder if he's going to put those to use throughout this entire season. Do you think he'll be around that long?
I am still up in the air as to how much we're seeing now is going to carry through to the final episodes. I think we might be on track for multiple arcs this season.
Yeah, I was under the impression that there might be three arcs this season.
I've read some similar things. Again, even what we saw of Cicada this week, I just don't think they're setting him up to be a villain that's going to be here for, you know, 20 plus episodes.
Now, I would enjoy greatly if maybe we saw three arcs, three different villains or antagonists or whatever. And at the end of it, all of them come together for a big brouhaha. That'd be great.
That could be fun. But again, let's say Cicada is the first arc of the season. How do you wrap that arc up in a way where he just goes away and has the ability to come back? I mean, we'll make some predictions. I think we can certainly play off of that. With Wells, and you mentioned that the fact that he got paid, you made note of how he got paid, which was an interesting point. Where did the money come from?
Yeah, and I really wish they had told us an amount. Oh, I really wish they had told us an amount so we'd have some idea of what we're working with as far as Barry and, you know, his money that he gets from whatever copyrights or grant or patents or whatever the lab holds, but Barry sold Star Labs stock to pay for that.
Which is the first time we're hearing that it's a publicly traded thing.
Right, yeah. So I bet it was a hefty amount. Now, is that going to come back to bite them?
One never knows what seeds they're planting along the way.
Yeah, I wish we knew how much of the stock he still owns or how much he owns, period.
Well, I imagine he's got to be the majority shareholder.
Well, I don't know if that's necessary. Is that necessarily true? Like,
well, if he's not, then I would be very surprised to find out who is the majority shareholder that we haven't met in 4 years.
Yeah, that would be great, actually. Like, if the whole time there was someone else who was a shareholder and they turned out to be a villain or something, I think that could be interesting. That could be a whole different set of problems. If they keep the problems coming at them from multiple levels, I think that'll keep our interest as long as they don't get too complicated or throw more than the team can reasonably resolve at them, I think.
And I think so far they're going at a good pace. This is not overly complicated. Yeah. It's not a big mystery. They're just, you know, so far through three episodes, not a slow drip, but we're definitely getting things that are moving the story forward and contributing details, you know, from week to week. So I think that's a plus and a little bit of a change from seasons gone by.
Oh, yeah, because seasons gone by now, we would have had so many more questions without an answer in sight.
So the next point that I think is relevant is, and this is, this got a lot of screen time through the episode, and this was the world's greatest detective so far, Caitlin and Ralph.
Yeah, those guys. Sneaking around Mama Frost's place, huh?
Mama Frost is happy and motherly as ever.
Ooh, yes, she's a special one, Mama Frost.
Actually, real quick before we get into that, how about Ralph the Pear, the Purple Pear? Breaking up that.
I forgot.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
There's a reason I forgot that.
And who's that villain? Recycling Man?
Yeah, what's...
With his solar-powered gun and I brought my own bag? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what was going on with that? Was that, like, supposed to be some kind of alien tech or...
That has to be some sort of... high-powered weapon. It made me think of, just to kind of cross the comic book streams, in Spider-Man Homecoming, when those random bank robbers get a hold of the Chitauri tech, and they're wearing the Avengers mask, and he's like, you guys aren't the real Avengers, but they had these really powerful weapons to just knock off ATMs. So I kind of thought that, like, who is this guy, and where'd you get this? So
I honestly thought that it was going to be something like that. I honestly thought that someone had just random black market alien tech. I guess that would have been too much like Supergirl.
Yeah. Let's not get into that.
Yeah, the crossover's not for a while. We've got a while.
So Ralph does a nice job there breaking that up and has a nice little social media moment, which I thought was funny.
That was great. He's great as the comedic relief that we need right now that... Cisco's kind of incapacitated.
Yeah, incapacitated. He spent I think we might have to start keeping track of how many episodes he has like a martini glass in his hand.
The whole season's been kind of a downward spiral for Vibe. I want to get Vibe back.
Well, now we got a shot because technically he's not here.
Yes. Technically he's dead.
Technically he's dead. But again.
Wait, no.
Sort of.
I guess technically he's not. Yeah, kind of. Almost dead.
Almost dead. So anyway, so Caitlin and Ralph, they go to see Mama Frost, and obviously she gives them nothing. She literally gives them the cold shoulder, and you almost want to say, oh, so that's where Killer Frost gets it from. And they decide to break into the file room and find some records, and they find the note from Caitlin's father that obviously to this point in her life she didn't know existed, and they leave that, you know, under the premise that that he committed suicide, and this was a note to her that she was never given.
And you know, right before they actually make it in, I love the scene with them trying to hack the digital lock and Ralph sliding his fingers under the door and there's a laser grid. Yeah, Ralph's great for the comedic relief. He's great. Yeah, this confused me a little, like when they found the suicide note, because I didn't understand why Caitlin would believe the note. Knowing her mother, knowing what she had seen through Vibe's vision, which is a far more trustworthy source. I was wondering why.
Well, yeah, you have Vibe's vision, but the note was he wrote it. So I think maybe at that point she's thinking, again, this is before we get that scene towards the end of the episode where she's basically accepting it, coming to grips with, you know, maybe I'll just listen to my mother and leave well enough alone. And I've got this note and a little bit of closure from him and the files and the notes. So I think up until the very end of the episode, she's just going to come to grips with it. And then,
you know what? That makes no sense. I guess I didn't think about the fact that what she really wanted was just closure.
Maybe we'll, again, because Vibe isn't actually dead, maybe we vibe that note and we get a little more about her father. So then obviously to wrap up Caitlin and Ralph, we do get the scene at the end of the episode where Caitlin on, and I'm going to be picky here, on a piece of paper that didn't need to be as big as it was, she figures out this message in these notes of elements that he basically sent a hidden secret message through his notes to come find me.
It might be kind of trippy and maybe a little bit silly, but I liked it. It was sweet. It showed that he really did love her.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he had something to do with her. I don't want to say inheriting or somehow taking on the Killer Frost powers. I think that's something that will be revealed to us obviously in time, but I think it's something he played a role in. And when you flash back, you know, to the season finale where she has that flashback and that vibe where she sees herself frosting, I guess, or transforming into Killer Frost at a young age. I think he had something to do with that either through experimentation. I mean, we're going to find out, I'm sure. But definitely he was playing the long game.
I'm really hoping it's through lineage.
You know, and I think we talked about this last episode, would definitely set us up for, all right, so where did metahumans come from?
Which we so need to explore a little bit more so that it becomes more grounded and more of an actual law of the show. Because I believe there was some point later in the show when they mentioned searching for metahumans using dark matter, when they were fully aware that not all metahumans were created by their particle accelerator.
Yeah, they've made that point before. That people have gotten powers since the particle accelerator, not because of it.
But there's precedent that they need to totally rearrange their thinking.
But again, that just goes to, you know, the writers and the showrunners who are weaving this thread and tying things together sort of as we go. I'm sure behind the scenes they have a plan for how many seasons are we going to do? Where are we going? I mean, we all want them to get to 2024, you know, or Nora has screwed up the timeline and things will happen quicker. As we see, you know, from our opening clip, that Cicada himself, we're discovering different guy. He's here earlier. A lot of pressure for that young girl to deal with.
That's a big, big mistake to introduce into the universe.
Now, again, I don't think that. Would you think that this is her big mistake, that because of doing the satellite thing, that Cicada existing earlier is the big mistake?
I'm not certain. I know that that's what they're dangling in front of us as the big mistake, but for several reasons, I don't believe that. For one, it feels kind of hollow, and it doesn't really line up with the things that she's done.
Or the things that have been said to her about the things she's done. Yeah,
absolutely. And two, we do have that line at the end from Sherlock, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. But that just makes whatever the big thing is, hopefully even bigger. Because her actions have screwed up a lot and done some damage. And if that's not the big thing.
Yeah. And again, if we're going to operate under the premise that we're going to get multiple arcs this season and, you know, two or three, you know, storylines and villains, there are some twists ahead. It's not going to be this simple.
I hope so. I look forward to that.
Although finding out that Cicada can fly, that adds a new wrinkle to him being just a man.
That was weird. That was, he's just going to take off into the air now.
Like, how are we supposed to deal with that?
Yeah, that's a whole nother level.
So in a classic professor transition, speaking of being on the same level, let's talk about fearless Sitting Joe, who, for some reason, just doesn't want to get up.
Poke and prod him all you like. He's just not going to get up.
He's not getting up. And I got to be, not that I've been lying the whole time, but I have to be honest here. I really bought into the fact that he was not scared. Like, I don't think he was selling Cicada a line of bull. I really think he was not afraid.
Oh, no, that was Joe. Joe is not scared. Joe is awesome. Joe is the man. Yeah, I truly think he was fearless as well. And he knew what he had at risk so much. And he was ready. He was on point and ready. He knew that Cecile was there. And he knew that, or he was praying, I'm sure, that telepathy was still at least marginally there when he spoke out to her mind and was like, you know, don't, that's what he wants. I can't remember what he said, but yeah, Joe was ready for it, even though for whatever reason he was sitting and couldn't stand up and actually fight back or whatever. Joe was ready.
No, and I'll be honest, I thought after last week's episode that Cecile's powers were basically done when the whole with the parenting and you know, baby Jenna, that all right, no more powers. She has to go be a mom. So I was really surprised, actually, that the powers were there for this particular scene.
It would be interesting if the baby was a telepath.
That would be interesting. She's a young baby, though, so she's not going to be talking anytime soon.
But if they keep the baby as a bridge for the occasional telepathic flash, much like tonight when there was high emotions and she was sleeping, bad things were happening. I mean, it could be a very convenient plot device down the road is all I'm saying.
I'm sure all in good time, they will explain nothing. But again, you have another instance where Cicada lets on and shows another piece of his personality that Joe, obviously the great detective Joe West, picks up on about Cicada being a father and just having that hunch based on just his eyes and how he reacted in that entire situation in the living room there.
Now, did Joe interact with Sherlock Wells?
No, not yet.
Because that will be quite interesting.
It's always nice to see what dynamic Joe has with the Wellses.
My barometer for almost anything on this show is how Joe reacts or interacts with it.
All right, so we are quite a bit into the episode. Why don't we address the death of Vibe?
All right. The big vibrating elephant in the room.
So we get to this situation because I guess from Cicada's first encounter with Vibe, not being successful in killing Vibe, who he easily identifies as a metahuman, is doing research at the Central City Public Library, which is where all you undergrounders hang out, I know, is doing some creepy in the dark research and is learning about Vibe. And that's how he is able to identify Joe West as somebody who could maybe lead me to Vibe. So that's how we get that scene and how that plays out. Vibe shows up because Cecile is able to get the emergency alert out to the team. Vibe is able to get dressed and Vibe and get there before Barry does. So is Barry the fastest man alive? We still don't know. And immediately Cicada pushes back into the breach and we find them in an ash-filled cricket forest. Thank you, Sherlock.
Yeah, that was good. Well, you know, they had to give him a way to prove himself, I guess.
I guess, because at that point they realize, oh, the guy we caught earlier in the episode, what was his name? They name-dropped David Hirsch, who in the comics, little comic book nugget, is Cicada. So they really changed up the whole origin, but the writers do a good job name-dropping things from time to time, or a lot of the time.
Sherlock said that David Hirsch was Cicada on 37 other Earths, so He wasn't wrong.
And clearly that guy was up to no good. They just wasn't Cicada. So.
Which actually begs a question. Is Cicada an independent force or something? Because if, how is someone else Cicada if David Hirsch is Cicada? Like, how, that would mean that Cicada is a separate thing, a separate entity on its own. Does that make sense?
The thing that pops into my mind, and I'm going to pull from what they attempted on Gotham to do when they would tell us, you know, that this person isn't the Joker, but inspired who would become the Joker. So it's the, maybe again, Cicada and the Joker are not on the same playing field, but the idea that what Cicada represents and the dagger and the power, maybe that's something that is transferable and somebody takes up the mantle of Cicada.
Right. Okay.
So that could be one possibility.
Gotcha, yeah. Wrapped my head around it. Good.
So, I mean, going back into the future, we never catch Cicada because who is Cicada over the years? Could Cicada be multiple people throughout time?
Oh, that's very plausible as well.
So we are in the woods, and we learn that the Speed Force dagger operates similar to the Force, where we can throw the dagger at somebody, hit them in the back, and then summon the whole, you know, the dagger and the body back to us, which is really well done.
Yeah, that totally took me by surprise. I was watching it and I was like, oh, it's a crazy fight, but out of nowhere, he just got harpooned and yanked. It was disturbing.
And then Nora has her moment where she has Nora flash time and is able to reflect on a conversation with Barry from earlier in the episode. And I still don't quite understand how the plan worked. Obviously, she goes and grabs that fuse-like object from near the pipeline. I would love to get that whole scene from her perspective.
Yeah.
Well, you know, did she pull Vibe into Flash time to let him know this is what you're going to do? But she just kind of tossed that thing at him, and how did he know to throw it and what was going to happen? And so,
yeah, I think that bears a closer rewatch, and I think we'll have to do that later. It was kind of techno babbly, sciencey, yancey, hand wavy, but it looked cool. It made me go, ooh.
It did look cool, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe again, when we went into episode two, we picked up with a different perspective on the Cicada gridlock experience. Maybe next week we start off with a little different perspective on, well, how did that actually go down? But, you know, long story short, Vibe with the transponder was able to Vibe out of there. The explosion from Cicada's perspective kills Vibe. You're left with the glasses, a hole in the ground, and then he flies away. Again, we touched on that. Vibe is okay. But to the world, Vibe is dead.
They are going to have to do some explaining for that. And that would be a wonderful way to do it. The cold opening being a more detailed explanation of what happened at the death of Vibe.
The odds are we're never going to get that. We just have to kind of go with it. But if you want to make it easy to watch and easy for people to understand, show us that alternate perspective.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I know they're listening, and I know they want to do it. No, it's already been filmed. I know it's too late.
But, I know. I also think about that, too. Like, we're like, oh, do they listen? No, they're way ahead. No.
Yeah. But now, my question is, has he faked his own death as Cisco Ramon?
I'm pretty sure it's just Vibe, because when they're back in Star Labs, you have the headline of the newspaper digitally on the screen that says, you know, Vibe dead, and it's a picture of him as Vibe. Nobody knows that Vibe is Cisco Ramon, scientist at Star Labs.
They don't see that hair?
Hey, you can walk around and wear a pair of glasses and fool a lot of people. There's a number of other things that happen in this episode that I don't know necessarily if we would classify them as plot points, but or things that made us go, ooh. But I think there are definitely a number of other things that were just interesting in the episode. So, for example, we get a little scene with Cicada in the hospital with his daughter creeping on the doctor. And that doctor seemed to be aware of this injury that we see that looks like a dark matter hole in his shoulder. Yeah. More things we need to have explained. But I wonder if the doctor knows what's going on.
It's interesting because, and for one, I thought the wound looked much like the dagger. Like the dagger could have caused that.
Because it was glowing.
Right, yeah, kind of like the dagger glows, which still definitely needs to be explained. Like what, you just have solid force, speed force right there? I don't know. So this doctor has been treating the daughter for a while, knows the father simply by his creepy presence, is aware of his wounds and obviously probably aware of his abilities, or at least something close to the idea that he's not 100% straightforward with her. The question is, how much does she know? And actually, there are a lot of questions.
Again, I'm sure as the team is able to learn more about him, and I think with the help of Sherlock Wells, profile him a little bit further. You know, we're supposed to get, again, they even make the point in the episode, we're going to have to beat him without powers.
Yeah.
So how are we going to do that? All right. Barry's a CSI. Nora's a CSI. Iris is a reporter. You have Sherlock Wells, who is supposed to, is now being presented as this great thinker and master of reasoning and deduction and great detective skills. Ralph presents himself as a detective, although just to go back a little bit, he gets shut down by Wells.
Yeah.
What do you call him? Wow. The little kangaroo?
Baby giraffe.
Baby giraffe.
Which is funny and all, but like you can't just walk in and sideline an established hero, you know. Of course he did.
But, he did.
But, wow.
So the
but
other
maybe
now another thing that obviously we find interesting in the episode, and this is before we get to the end, but close to it, creepy monitors and somebody watching Caitlin in the lab. What was up with that?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Were they watching Caitlin?
Yeah, that was just after she put together the message of come find me from her father. And as it pans out, it transitioned to somebody watching that happen on a series of monitors.
Okay. For some reason, I thought she was... I need to rewatch that scene because once I realized what was going on, I had lost track of what had happened right before because I was excited about it. I was like, oh my goodness, creepiness and weird mysteries that we need to solve now. And then I started thinking about it and I was like, I wonder if it's one of her parents.
Until you said it, I'm thinking, is it like, sure. I didn't know if the room was or was not in Star Labs. And like, was it Wells, you know, watching or doing something? So now that you say that, could it be her father watching from a distance or have, I mean, oh no, we'd be surprised if somebody had broken into Star Labs and set up cameras.
Yeah.
So we have creepy camera guy watching Caitlin. I like your theory that potentially is that Caitlin's father. Another fantastic thing that time will tell.
It could be Mama Frost as well.
I did not think it was a woman. It came across to me. He got like what would be the left side of a person's head. And it didn't come across to me as a female head.
Okay. Cause
you could see the ear, and Caitlin's mom has long hair and I don't think she's rocking the ponytail too often.
Yes, I should go back and rewatch that then.
So then the last thing that we find interesting, and this brings us to our epilogue stinger, and we have Sherlock Wells questioning Nora's motivations for being in the past, to which I ask you, Jada, are the writers baiting us?
Yes.
What are they trying to sell us on?
That I don't know. But they are quite blatantly tickling our fancy. They're telling us so much by not saying anything. Nora has, there's so much to Nora's story, and just the idea that her coming back wasn't her idea, or that she might be beholden to some other power, opens up a universe of possibilities. And
you mean the way a many-verse of possibilities?
Many, many, many verses of possibilities. But they used Sherlock to do that, which I liked, because they had already established his deductive reasoning and his deductive superpower. And they so nonchalantly just kind of said, here's him seeing through to the truth of Nora. And now you can either choose to believe that or not, but if you choose to believe that, that means there's so much more going on.
That's a classic season one epilogue scene.
And you know what? I like it.
I loved it. Because, again, yes, they set him up as, I mean, that scene where he's kind of going around the Star Labs coffee bar. Mm-hmm. You know, like what he did with Iris about, you know, having a tattoo. Oh, maybe it's a former lover. And, you know, that's the first I'm hearing of Iris having a tattoo on her neck or shoulder. And her hair is like always down. You'd never see her exposed. And she was visibly uncomfortable. Like, wait, how do you know this? So they set it up as he said it. There's got to be something there. And Nora's own facial expressions as she, in that moment, realized, wait, you're confronting me? How do you know? And when she walked away, the look on her face said, uh-oh.
Now, I could read the look on her face as two different things, and I'm not sure which to believe. One, it could be exactly that. Uh-oh, how do you know that this wasn't my idea, or that I'm in cahoots with someone, or maybe I was forced to come back, or something like that. Or maybe she herself had never thought of the fact that it wasn't her idea.
Maybe she didn't see it from that perspective.
Right. And she started to think, oh, well, maybe it wasn't really my idea all along. Which still begs the question, well, who else are we talking about? You know, what other circumstances were you in that would facilitate you needing to do this?
All right. Do you want to play theories?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what I'm thinking. I forget if it was in the first or second episode. She name dropped the curator of the Flash Museum, Mr. Miles. We had speculated then that, you know, in the comics at least, Eobard Thawne was a curator of the Flash Museum, and that's how he became a fanatic and wanted to be the Flash, and ultimately things play out and he winds up becoming the Reverse Flash. So could this also play into, is this Mr. Miles character actually Eobard Thawne? Referencing going back to Crisis on Earth X, is this the current, what face am I going to be wearing next time, Mr. Allen? Mm-hmm. So there's that. Could Reverse Flash be a back half of the season arc that we're going to come back to Reverse Flash and this whole big twist? Because it seems like, again, with Sherlock and, you know, CSI work and Iris being the reporter, maybe we're doing a little more detective work. So this season might have a more mystery tone to it, which you would think you'd get more of that with the Thinker, but here we are in season five, maybe getting more of a mystery type story where we don't know what's going to happen and they're just going to kind of drop clues all along the way. I also recently read something that maybe she is in cahoots with the, or a twin brother we don't know about yet, who for whatever reason is coaching her and she just hasn't revealed that. So there's a couple of possibilities that that could be. What do you think?
I think that they have masterfully laid us breadcrumb trails that go in circles and double back on themselves, and we just don't know.
Jaden, these aren't breadcrumbs. These are like full-on croutons. Right.
Yeah. It's so... this is the fun of episode three. episode three, yeah. There's only three episodes, and they've given us plenty to think about. But they know that they have so far to go, they haven't really given us enough to formulate any solid plans. And it should just be a fun roller coaster ride from here on out, right?
This is one of those moments where I think back to, you know, a couple of years ago where I'm just a consumer of this particular program, this podcast, and I would listen to the previous host lay down their theories. And at that point, I would be a little behind, you know, where I'm listening to the older episodes of the podcast, but I'm in the present time watching the show, and it's like, oh, you predicted this. Wow, you got it right. Or, oh, I can't believe you predicted that, and we then see what happens. So maybe we're right, or maybe people will look back and say, wow, those two guys were fools, and what theories did they come up with?
Right? It'll be interesting. One thing I would like to have happen is that Nora really just be a good person. I think with the way they have it set up and her actually being their daughter, it would break my heart if they were like, ah, she's evil or she's got really bad intentions or something like that. I hope they don't go that far in revealing whatever it is that she's keeping.
I think they're going to set her up and create her to be what you're saying, genuine. But I think a possibility is she's been taken advantage of. By who? Well, first, that could be the case. And I think we have a number of things that we can theorize as to who maybe, whose agenda this is. And maybe she's just a pawn in a bigger game.
That would be great. I would like to see that resolved. I don't want it to be a dangling thread or I don't want it to be an issue going forward. I would like to be neat and perfect and wrapped up in a nice little bow and be like, boom, by the end of the season. I doubt.
Now, see, I think they've changed their tactic here regarding how they're dropping stuff. Because you think back to last season, you know, we first met Nora in the crossover in episode 8. And they slow dripped her the rest of the season for this, what's happening now. So they knew around this time or even last summer what they want to do here in season 5 if they're going to bring her in and where they're going.
Right. Wow. Episode 8. Yeah, the crossovers always happen rather early in the season. I forget that. And that was a slow drip then because she stuck around for the rest of the season.
And you go back even to episode 1 last year where he comes out of the Speed Force and he's speaking all that gibberish. Some things were paid off in season 4. I think some things are yet to be paid off, but we'll be able to look back and say that's where they first dropped it on us.
Right, right.
So kudos to the writers who, again, thank you for listening. We respect you and we appreciate your work. But speaking of respecting their work, if we could, we would have to go back in time to the beginning of this very episode of CCU. Jada, we didn't do our ratings for this episode yet.
Oh, wow. We totally forgot that, didn't we?
So rather than put a crack in the coffee cup of podcasting, we're going to give them to you now. So, Jada, would you like to go first and we'll get our ratings in for episode 3 here?
Absolutely. Yeah, I did think it was a very good episode. I think they've continued to give us consistent and well-written episodes. I gave it an 8.5. I was teetering between an 8 and an 8.5. Flash museums. I had to deal with the Flash Museum. I've waited so long. Between 8 and 8.5 Flash museums, because although it was a very good episode and it did some advancing, it still feels like there's something that, there was significant amounts of information missing, or something I can't even quite put my finger on, something missing that kept it from being really great.
For me, I went a straight up 8, and I ranked this one as 8 out of 10 baby giraffes.
Baby giraffe.
And the reason I went with an 8 was I felt, compared to last week's episode, this was a much better episode.
Oh, yeah.
Last week we talked about, we didn't talk about the meta of the week until we were almost done with the episode. So we didn't face that issue today in this episode. Everything that happened moved the stories forward. So again, if there was some super bombshell, 9 or 10. But for what we got in this episode, definitely a solid 8 out of 10. And I think a lot of that rating for me stems from the Wells Nora scene near the end of the episode.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That weighed pretty heavy.
I said from the first time we started doing this that for me, I live for the stingers at the end.
The stingers, right? Yeah. A well placed stingers gotta get you every time.
So now, speaking of well placed content, now it's time to hear from all of you. So we have a bunch of feedback, and we're going to start it off with, for as long as I've been listening to this show, I think this is going to be our youngest undergrounder ever. So, Jada, let's say hello to Derek. And Derek's feedback is audio and comes to us about episode 2, or it's based on episode 2. So take it away, Derek.
Hi, my name is Derek, and I love the CCU Flash podcast. I really like how it's all fitting together, and I really liked episode 2. I actually think one of my theories is maybe Cicada is Caitlin's father. Because, like you guys said, because I know you guys talked about this, Nora and her father, Nora and Barry, daughter and father, just like Cicada. But, because Cicada might be Caitlin's dad. So, thank you guys so much. Love your show. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Thank you, Derek. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. That was great feedback. We appreciate it, my friend.
And please continue to call in, and please continue to share your theories. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't think that what Derek proposes about Cicada being Caitlin's father would be true. And I think we really get that evidence here in episode 3, because now we've seen Cicada, he's not old enough to be Caitlin's father. He's got, his own young daughter. But I could certainly see where, before you see him, maybe that could have been a twist. So, good observation by Derek.
Yeah, it was like they were kind of pushing us in that direction in the beginning. We kind of understood that he had father-daughter issues. Caitlin has father-daughter issues. They're being pretty heavy-handed with the themes this season. But in the reveal, yeah, we see that he's quite younger. Now, that's not to say that he definitely doesn't have anything to do with Caitlin's father. That could be possible. There could be some kind of interaction there in the past, or maybe even the present that we're unaware of. But
Maybe an alliance of some sort. So maybe Derek has uncovered something in a roundabout way. So we'll see. But Derek, please, thank you for listening. And we hope to hear from you in future episodes. So keep enjoying The Flash and keep calling that number. We'd love to hear from you again. Our next piece of feedback comes from Adam. Jada, why don't you share what Adam had to say?
Well, Adam has to say, I have three things from the season so far. If Barry's mother being killed is a fixed point that can be changed, how was Reverse Flash able to kill her since in the original history, she survived? I only count the number of people Cicada has murdered at two. Was there more I missed? Iris states he is one of the worst serial killers in history. Also, Supergirl isn't a metahuman. She's an alien.
Applause, applause for Jada stepping into the role of Adam.
Yeah. I think we went over that Supergirl isn't a metahuman. That might have been just a matter of misinformation. I can hand wave that away, I think. Headcanon that away. Now, as far as Cicada's victims, who do we have so far?
Block and Gridlock. And for the first time, I'm realizing they rhyme.
Block and Gridlock. Yes. I guess they're the only two that we've...
I think what that is based on, again, being him, Iris referring to him as one of the worst killers in history, I think that's her statement is based on how Nora described him as... He was this murderer who killed metahumans who you never caught. So I just think Iris is basing her statement on what Nora has said. Clearly, after two victims here in the present day in 2018, that's not enough to yet consider him to be one of the worst serial killers in history. All right, and the other point that Adam makes... I'll just requote him. If Barry's mother being killed is a fixed point that can be changed, how was Reverse Flash able to kill her since in the original history she survived? So, Jada, what I take away from that point is if we go back to the start of this series, the Reverse Flash traveled back in time, killed Barry's mother, got stuck in the past. In season one, he causes Barry to become the Flash sooner than he would have.
Right.
So he would have, I think that's saying that he would have become the Flash anyway, and that it wasn't because he went back to kill Nora, or Barry's mom. Well, not to confuse anybody, to go back and kill Barry's mom. So how could that event hold such significance? I think that's what he's asking. Originally that shouldn't have even happened. So what do you think?
Could the answer probably be in the question? It was such a significant change from the original timeline that it cemented itself as a fixed point in time and space.
That, I think that would be a Legends explanation. But then maybe... Again, we're getting history from a weird perspective where while we can say technically that in this original timeline, there is no Reverse Flash, but then maybe that is a fixed event that we think shouldn't have happened, but it had to happen and everything's happening on time. But if it didn't, but the funny theory I had, not funny, but interesting would be, if everything is now happening sooner, does the event from 2024 now happen sooner?
Would that be pulled 4 years earlier as well to 2020?
We're more likely to have a Flash season 7.
7?
than a Flash season 10.
That's true.
So, interesting points that you make, Adam. Thank you for taking the time to submit that. Obviously, we certainly welcome these theories. Jade and I have certainly thrown out a bunch of theories here, and we'll see what the payoff is. So thanks for sending that in. And anybody can do that by heading over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And we do have one more that, now, Jada, I know you haven't heard this yet, but this is going to make your head hurt. So take it away, X-Force 11.
Hello, Professor and Story's voice. I just have one question. Are we ever going to see Flash jump forward in time so it matches the other CW shows? Or will that time jump just be forgotten? Because the other shows had a 5-month break. Our show started immediately after the end of last season. So, just wondering. X-Force 11 out.
Thank you for making my head hurt.
Oh, no. I haven't even thought of that.
I didn't either. And then I heard his message. I'm like, oh, my goodness. We're still 5 months behind the other shows.
Well, as long as they don't interact, we're good.
And to this point, they haven't interacted with the other shows.
Well, then until the crossover, we just won't think about it.
So that's coming too. The only interaction we've had, and this goes back to episode one of this season, when they send Wally to go see the Legends to have Nora's blood tested by Gideon on the Wave Rider. When we get to, and here's a little mini crossover, in Legends episode one, they reference that Wally's not there because he made the decision to go off and find himself, which in theory would have already happened 5 months earlier, because the events of Flash episode one happened immediately after the end of season four. And you guys can't see this, but Jada is, his face says, oh my God, please stop.
Oh, your brain, what have you done? Yes. I think I understand. So, we're going to have to flash forward. Oh, Jeff, whatever you've done. We're going to have to flash forward in order to make things okay for the... Well, I guess maybe not. I was thinking to make all of our timelines sync up for the crossover.
Timey-wimey.
Yeah, but it might not even be necessary for the crossover. The crossover might fix all that itself because it looks like we're getting some kind of craziness, let me say that.
And there's been a lot of craziness leaking out. So, I mean, we could certainly spoil it, but we're going to, I think we'll hold off on
all in due time
crossover type stuff. But the articles are out there. There are things and pictures and images. All I'll say is, because it relates to what we do here, we're going to get ourselves some John Wesley Shipp.
Cannot wait. Yeah, and that, however we get ourselves some John Wesley Shipp, might be what it is that the Deus Ex Machina that we need to write the time stream.
So as is becoming old habit here, we will find out in due time what is going on. thank you to Derek and Adam and our very own X-Force 11 for submitting feedback. If you want to submit feedback in the future, as we catch up with the timeline, you could do that by calling the GSM feedback line at 304-837-2278. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can connect with us on Twitter. We are at the Flash GSM, and we have a great Facebook group. So if you head over to facebook.com and you search for the Flash GSM, become an undergrounder today. Or if you could travel back in time to it yesterday. As always, you're going to want to submit feedback after the episode airs. And really, it seems like we're recording these on Thursday nights, but we're still going to ask that you submit feedback by Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. And that's just going to be the easiest. And the more feedback we get, the more fun we can have with all of you. Jada, you want to have fun with the people, right?
I do.
Awesome.
I really do.
So the last thing that we will leave everybody with is our flash forward. So, Story's voice, take us to the future.
In the future, Barry and Iris face the ultimate parenting test. test, excuse me, when Team Flash battles Spin, a savvy millennial armed with Metatech, and a dangerous agenda for their daughter, Nora. You know what? I'm going to redo this whole thing there.
Sure.
You think I should say the names too, as far as like Grant Gustin and
Candace Patton? We know who they are.
Okay, cool. Barry and Iris face the ultimate parenting test when Team Flash paddles Spin, a savvy millennial armed with Metatech and a dangerous agenda for their daughter, Nora. Ralph is feeling defeated until an unlikely source issues a challenge to help boost his confidence.
Go watch the trailer online, people. we will see what happens. I think we can leave it there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It seems like it might be another villain of the week or possibly some filler, but it'll be interesting. I have faith.
I think if I'm going to speculate, we're going to get a meaningless villain of the week, but it's going to impact some of the relationships. I think they're at least setting us up for every episode. We're going to move forward.
And, you know, I think I'm very much down with that. The villain of the week help keeps it episodic, considering we are still on a 22, 23 episode season. And that's a lot to fill. So like filler. Drop in just to see, because a lot of people aren't trying to follow the complete storylines. But as long as those villains or whatever filler it is affects the main storyline, moves it forward, then I'm down for it.
Awesome. And the last thing that we will leave you with, if you haven't realized it, we are a part of the Golden Spiral Media Network of podcasts, which you can find at goldenspiralmedia.com. And last week we teased the Stories Voice other podcast related to Doctor Who, which you want to definitely check out. This episode, we want to highlight the Rewatch podcast with hosts Corey, Tom, and Nathan. And the Rewatch podcast revisits past TV shows and movies. You can connect with the Rewatch podcast at Rewatch Pod on Twitter. And you can go to facebook.com/Rewatch Podcast. And some of their recent episodes look really cool, where they talked about Halloween and they've done some episodes on old episodes of Quantum Leap, which, I mean, great time travel show and super cool stuff going on there.
Holy 80s.
Holy 80s is right. So this has been episode 117 of the Central City Underground podcast, where we talked about Season 5, Episode 3, The Death of Vibe. I have been and will continue to be the Professor. You can connect with me on Twitter at CJ Nessie. Would love to have conversations over there, and I hope to see you in the Facebook group.
And I have been Jada, aka Stories Voice, and you can contact me on Twitter at Stories Voice.